Conversations on Woman of Size often have adult themes and language, so if you're listening in mixed company, beware, earmuffs may be needed. What's up, everybody? Hey, thank you so much for listening to the season 2 finale of Woman of Size. That's right. I'm your host, as always, Gianna Schmieding. But yes, everyone, as winter sets in over here on Tongva lands, it is time for me to also go on a brief hibernation from podcasting. But never fear. I will still be posting content to Patreon during this hiatus. If you're into that kind of thing, or, you know, if you're just thankful for what you've consumed on my podcast or on the socials, please feel free to drop by over at patreon.com/womanofsize and become a patron. I'm so thankful to those of you who have become patrons so far. So I just want to say a quick thank you so much to the following people: Barbara, Becca, Brianna or Brianna, Brian, Elena, Alyssa, Heather, Kelly, Kirsten, Kirsten, Kristen, Christine with a K, Mariah, Rachel, Ruby, Sarah, Steph, Vince, and Tolma. Thank you, each of you, so much for coming on board with me over at Patreon. I look forward to sharing so much more content with you in the next few months. Also, I do want to say that if you're a person who enjoys Woman of Size and you think it's a podcast that your friends and or your family could benefit from, tell them, share it with them, help them subscribe. That's sometimes a hard part about podcasts. You know, post about it and tag me at Woman of Size Pod on the socials. We really should continue to find strength and power in our shared experiences, because that's what Woman of Size is all about. It's about learning from and with each other. And we have so much more to learn. Okay. I'll stop preaching. I'm so excited to end the season on this hilarious brassy broad, y'all. She is such a funny comedian. And she isn't afraid to lay it all out for us. So please enjoy my conversation with the outstanding Emily Duke. All right. Hey, everybody. Thanks for listening to Woman of Size. I am here with Emily Duke. Hi, Emily.
Hello.
Thanks so much for being on my pod.
I just like snorted. I don't know what just came out of my face, but evidently I'm like even more excited to be here than I realized. It's a weird air just ejected itself out of one of my many face holes.
So, honestly, I'm honored. I don't know.
Yeah, that's never happened to me before.
I feel cool about it. If you do,
yeah, no, I feel great.
Okay, great. Emily, this is so exciting for me. I'm meeting a new friend. I feel like I get to meet so many different women in comedy through this podcast who identify as people of size, women of size, or the like. Because this is a podcast,
I'm gonna push you on what the like is.
Okay,
like,
great.
Do you have like good like animals of size? Like what?
You know,
like
what?
Souls of size.
I do love animals of size. I love mannequins of size. I feel like I am an ally to the animal of size community and the mannequin of size community.
So I'm actually trying to confront the fact that I didn't grow up with pets, and I have my first pet. I got a kitten. And he is like a very, I mean, we looked him up online because cat weight is not like human weight. It like actually does matter. It's not just the diet industrial complex. Like there are actual health ramifications on their little tiny bones. And I always imagined myself having this big fat cat, and he's just like really like a normal crazy eater. And I just like, I feel like there's a disconnect between the two of us because he's like never had an eating disorder. And I just like, I never pictured that in my son. I just have this like skinny ass, dainty ass eating cat. And I'm kind of like, this isn't what I imagined, you know?
I really want a cat, and I want a big one. I want a big fluffer. I need a fluffy cat so that I have at least the illusion that it's a fat cat.
Yeah, Fluffy is totally fine. But, like, my best friend's cat, like, has to go on, like, special diets because every time they put out food, it happens a lot with cats that are adopted later in life. They're, like, afraid that they're not going to have access to food. It's basically, like, me being put on Weight Watchers at 5 years old. Like, right, it's the same thought process. But we got my kitten when he was so young, and he just, like, he's always believes that there's going to be food there. And I'm like, God, what a pleasant life you must lead. And yeah, it's just, I just always imagined that I would have a cat with an eating disorder, and I don't. It's weird. Oh, but I love him anyway.
Like, good for the kitty. Like, this, yeah, let the kitty be liberated.
Yeah, he has a kitten soul of size. He's just not a kitten of size. And
you
that's
know,
okay.
Yeah, I get it. Emily, because this is a podcast about our bodies and lives, I want to know, first and foremost, what language you use to describe and discuss your body, to yourself or to others or both, and how you identify.
So I identify as fat. That's the language I choose. It has been a pretty long journey to get to that point. Like, both from, like, my actual weight fluctuating, mm-hmm. and also just, like, coming to terms with that. And really, no matter how much I said, like, politically and intellectually, like, fat is not a bad word. And, you know, it's important for us to talk about fat liberation and fat stigmatization in our society. And, like, I viewed that all very intellectually. But I think the last piece of that to come was to be like, okay, and I am fat, and that's okay.
Yep.
And that is definitely something where, like, there are, you know, there are good days, there are bad days, you know, as far as confronting that and whether or not you feel resentments towards that. I would say it's something that I say very freely. And, you know, I think as much as I ever have removed the emotion from for probably a year and a half, 2 years-ish. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. So, yeah, I identify with fat. I would say I began identifying as fat as a comedian and as a sexual assault survivor all in the same, like, week. Like, I was like, these are just, like, three things that I'm just going to say about who I am now, and I'm not going to, like, overanalyze. You know what I mean? Like, it's, like, it all happened very quickly where I was like, okay, these are things about me, and they are just things about me, and I don't need to, like, be like, okay, but am I performing enough to really identify as a comedian? Or, like, was my violent experience violent enough? Or, like, you know, am I fat enough? Or, you know what I mean? Like, it's, like, all, I was like, no, fuck it. Like, this is who I am. This is the fucking deal. And I'm just going to fucking say it.
Was there, like, a catalyst to coming to that, like, realization for you? Or was it just, like, building up over time and just, like, at once you just got so tired of backing
off
of it?
I think it happened. I think the first one I decided was really identifying as a comedian. That was, like, the first one. And I think in identifying as a comedian, it gives you a lot of permission to start to brand yourself. I mean, like, such an obnoxious way to put it, but I was like, this is my branding choice. You know what I mean? Like, I was like, I can't get on stage and talk about, you know, being a victim of domestic and sexual violence and, like, not admit that that happened. You know what I mean? But I was like, but these are the things I'm writing about, and I can't write jokes about what it is like living in a fat body and how I feel stigmatized about that without admitting that that's who I am. And I think admitting a lot of that also gave me a lot of freedom in my writing to be much more eloquent about not being self-deprecating, obviously less so with the sexual assault component, but you see a lot of fat comics, especially earlier in their comedy, that are doing these kind of self-deprecating things about their weight or whatever. And, like, that's never what I'm doing. Like, by no means. Like, I start pretty much every set by saying that I recently lost 30 pounds. And then when everybody claps, I say, sorry, I meant gain 30 pounds, but now I know who supports the diet industrial complex. And I'm like, that is super important for me to know out of the gate. So that's all a very long-winded way of saying, like, it all kind of happened at first. I think identifying as a comic was the first thing that happened. But as soon as I did that, it all just spiraled.
What is your comedy background? Like, how long have you been doing comedy, and how long have you been writing about through a comedic lens?
I mean, I would say I've been doing comedy since I was just a wee lass, you know? Mm-hmm. Like, I have definitely used comedy as a means of connecting with people and, like, coping with my life forever. That has always been my role in the world. I actually, okay, this is going to be real embarrassing. Did you watch Glee?
Did I watch what?
Glee?
Yeah, I watched the first season and maybe part of the second season, and then I dropped off.
So there's this whole thing with Glee where they, like, all wear t-shirts about, like, what they're afraid of. Like, it's like, I'm, like, you know, like, the Uggo or, like, whatever. Like, they all wear. And me and my best friends on the last night of Glee all wrote, like, what ours would be. So, like, he's gay and he wrote, like, queermo or something. And, like, our other best friend has been hospitalized for an eating disorder. She wrote, like, disordered, and I wrote funny fat friend, because it was, like, always the role that I had played, and I was so afraid of that for so long, of just being like, I'm just here with all the hot popular girls, and I'm just, like, their funny fat friend, and that's who I am.
Yep.
And I was afraid of that, and now I'm like, fuck it, that's dope. It's that bitch so is fucking so much dope. Doper than everybody else. Like, absolutely, I want to be the funny fat friend. Like, are you fucking kidding me? Like,
you want to be the fucking basic ass, like, skinny that, lady?
Yeah, like, I was like, that's fucking incredible. So yeah, I mean, I think I've always sort of played that role. I think taking comedy more seriously, probably first time I got on stage, I tried to do stand up in college, and then through, like, some, like, I just really didn't jive with the rest of the stand-up group. We were in a very rural town in New Hampshire, so it wasn't like you could, like, go to clubs. It was like a student group, and we were just performing for other students. I didn't really jive with a lot of them. Nothing really happened there. And then I had this really heartbreaking experience, which, again, I very much read into it because of my weight. I don't know. But I auditioned to be in the improv group, and I convinced my, like, very thin bitch, like, we're not really friends anymore, so I can say this, but, like, pretty boring, not funny thin friend to audition with me. And they ended up offering her a spot and not me in this improv group.
And I was like
oh, so God. Horrified. I, like, thought I was going to die. Like, I fully thought I was going to die. And I'm not saying this because I'm super conceited. Like, this was fully like, oh, no, they just wanted to fuck her. Like, that's what was happening.
Yeah.
I mean, it was a group of 8 dudes.
I mean, let's be honest. Like, improv spaces are fuckboy spaces at their soul.
Especially at Ivy League colleges. It was rude. And I was, like, so heartbroken. And I remember I was like, I can't eat for weeks. And, like, this is all because of my weight. And, like, just remember just reading so much into it and just, like, losing so much autonomy there. Just feeling like this girl that, like, literally was just, like, super, like, enigmatic and thin. And, like I was just like, the whole thing was very off-putting. And then I was very turned off by, like, performing in any traditional way for a while. Because I just felt, like, very exposed on that stage. And I felt very much like I was passed over, and I felt like it was a function of my weight. And again, like, whether or not that's an objective truth, I don't know. But, like, that's how I felt. Whatever socialization had gotten me to that point, it felt very much like I did not get on this team because they would rather hook up with my friend because she's thinner than me.
I have started to stop gaslighting myself about those feelings. Because I feel like I've had those same feelings about everything, about dating, about, performing, about being included in things. And I've always kind of blamed my body size and how seriously people take me, or how they stigmatize me in different spaces. And then there's this next level of stigmatization where it's like, oh, I'm just inventing this narrative in my head because I'm not body positive, or, like, whatever the fuck that is. And now I've gotten to this point where I'm like, no, actually, that's my truth. Like, I don't know. I'm like,
not my problem. Like, yeah. But yeah, I mean, it was just, also, I should mention, like, don't get me wrong, like, I was bigger in college than, like, a lot of my friends, and I've always been, like, slightly bigger than my friends, but I was a lot fucking smaller than I am now. You know what I mean? And, like, I, like, by no means was I at, like, if I met me in 2008 now, I would be like, that's a, like, medium-sized thin woman.
Yeah, you know what
I
mean? Totally.
Like, it was whatever. So that fucked me up. And then I came to New York. I started doing stand-up pretty casually. But I would, like, write for my friends, and I would just write for myself and, you know, started doing stand-up a little bit, starting, like, 2015, 2016. And then about a year and a half ago was like, okay, if I'm going to do this, I'm going to, like, actually do it. Yeah. And I'm going to actually pursue comedy in a real way. And whether or not that's, like, I mean, that's also opened me up to so much beyond stand-up, like, writing sketch and writing for TV and, you know, like, I'm doing more and more podcast work and all this stuff and all of these ways to create and be creative that I'm really excited about. But I would say that, like, really ramped up in the last year and a half. And again, I'm, like, so much more successful, and I just keep fucking being fat and being successful. So, like, everybody be fat. It's great.
Yeah. Be whatever you are. Like, just to
be whatever you are.
Whatever the fuck you are right now, like, just be it, and you're going to find so much happiness.
Yeah, 100%. So, yeah, I mean, I will say, like, comedy has been very freeing and very great for me in a lot of ways. And these are a lot of issues that I've talked about for a long time. Mm-hmm. As far as, like, the stigma associated with fat bodies, and there's so much that goes into it, and it's so ripe for comedy. Like, it's just so ripe for comedy. I think the hardest thing that I confront is there's this whole narrative that I think is honestly shifting in the comedy world of, like, oh, the best comics can speak to everyone, you know? Like, it's like they can go to, you know, small towns in the South and, like, big cities, and, like, they can be super, super duper successful everywhere, and that's the best comics. And I'm like, you know what? That's not me. And, like, maybe that's fine. You know what I mean? Like, I think that's the biggest thing I'm confronting is, like, I don't really have any interest in, like, making people that are, okay, I'm not going to say inherently, they weren't born that way, but, like, whatever, socialized and educated to the point that they are completely shutting down when they see a woman talking about, you know, their sex life or their weight or whatever. Like, I don't need to tailor my material to make it work for those people.
Yeah.
I'm just hoping that everybody will ultimately meet me there. So I do assume a certain amount of intelligence on the part of my audience about these issues, which I hope works. But there's a lot of, like, what is my role to educate people about the diet industrial complex and about my eating disorder and my background and, you know, how I feel victimized by weight bias in this country. And, you know, what is my role to just, like, assume that everybody knows all of this is super fucking shitty and let's just make jokes about it.
Yeah, I think there's actually something quite funny in my experience about just assuming that people do know about it, like, and just speaking to people's highest intelligence, which it's both funny and also challenging to an audience to be like, you know, like, clowning on the diet industry as if we should be, because we should be.
Like, it's a ridiculous thing that has happened in our world.
Like, yeah, it's insane.
Ridiculous thing. Like, okay, for context on my family, like, my mom is, like, a very, she's, like, a very classic, like, how do I say this? She's a very classic, like, middle class baby boomer white woman who obviously went through, like, the really intense 80s periods of, like, everything's Weight Watchers, everything's low fat. Like, yes. And that is just what her world was. Like, it became so normalized in her experience to be like, oh, all the food in the house is lean cuisine, everything is diet, and that's just the way that the world works.
Right.
And my sister and I were both very much raised in that. I think it affects women and men. I think it affects women more, which, like, we can talk about why forever, but I'll just assume that we're all on board with that.
Well, I think the marketing is geared toward predominantly women.
Yeah, 100%. And so my sister and I were both raised in this, like, very, very, very oppressively diet home. You know, like, it was, everything was diet food. And that was a big mode of my mom's control. That was a big part of her. My dad moved out when I was about 5 years old. Like, my mom really controlled the kitchen and controlled the food in this world. And my sister and I both had really serious eating disorders, like, very, very, very serious eating disorders for most of our life. And, like, I by no means think that that is, like, my mother's fault at all. Like, in no way do I think that. But I just think her relationship with it, just from being in a different time, was so different than hers and mine were. And my sister is a thin woman, but she is a very vocal fat activist. She's actually, she doesn't like to say intuitive eating expert because she thinks there is like a time and a place for emotional eating. So that's a whole other thing. Uh-huh. But she does a lot of incredible work. Her name is Isabel Fox and Duke. Quick plug. She does a lot of incredible work. She is a thin woman, but is a huge fat activist and does a lot of work in dismantling weight bias and the diet industrial complex. And like, I'm a fat comic, and we've both just gone on to have weight and the diet industrial complex be such a huge part of our lives.
Yeah.
And it's just seeing generationally how different it is between the two of us and my mom is really nuts. I don't even remember how I got here. Sorry.
No, it's fascinating. It's interesting to come out of that world. I mean, I've interviewed so many different people on the spectrum of fatness about how, I mean, I think being raised in a diet obsessed and a weight obsessed culture as we were, and our mothers and grandmothers were pretty much as well. I mean, you know, modernism and like the Mad Men era of women were just like fed so much marketing around being thin and being, you know, staying in the home and just like creating this domain around food and food intake. And and there is, it's just interesting to hear everyone's experience coming out of that and looking back on it and realizing it was incorrect or just terrible and traumatizing, and to see that different people are taking different paths. Some people are extremely traumatized by it and still working through that. Some people are like, you know, making it their whole platform, you know, the whole message of their, you know, life. And it is really cool that you both your sister and you have kind of grown into discussing it in your own lives in different ways.
Yeah, 100%. You don't have to answer this, but were you put on diets as like a very small child?
No, I wasn't.
When my dad moved out, I gained 30 pounds when I was 5 years old, and they put me on a no carb diet, and I had to go to therapy for emotional eating. So at 5 years old, keep in mind, like, my dad moved out, I got a new babysitter, and my teacher left. So like, obviously I was 5 years old. How much control I had over what was going in my mouth, like, I do not know. But
sure,
my doctor saw that I gained 30 pounds and I was put in baby therapy. So I went once a week to my therapist, and that was the only time. First of all, they gave me a bag of chips every time I went to therapy. So like, the reward was also food.
Yep, yep.
And my therapist, I will never forget this, she drew these drawings of like a little girl, and it was like a body diagram. And within this like torso was a jail, and there were all of these little like teardrops behind the jail cell. Yeah. And they looked like the Math Dodger teardrops. I don't know if you remember that, but
yes,
they looked like the little teardrops, and they were all labeled like different feelings. So they were labeled like anger, jealousy, like sadness, whatever. And the guards of the jail were like pieces of pizza and like ice cream. And there was all this narrative.
Holy shit.
Yeah. And this is how I was explained to a 5-year old that I was an emotional eater. And I just like, looking back at it in retrospect, I'm like, again, I was 5 years old. Like, I don't think I was like binge eating to like handle my parents' divorce. Like, I didn't have access to like my cupboards. Like, I don't know what this narrative was, but it was so ingrained in me that I was an emotional eater. That's what they always, always, always told me. And it became such an obsessive thing because I was taught from such an early age that this is how I dealt with problems. And it's like a chicken or the egg situation where,
but
like,
do
I don't
you feel
know.
Like you were, I mean, you just said no. You didn't have, how you didn't have access be? To your own cupboards and
yeah,
fridge.
As an, I have no idea how a 5-year-old could possibly be an emotional eater. Like, I literally, like, you are so close to like your baseline of need for nutrients at that point.
Yeah.
And like, I'm so resentful about this because it was like, it was ridiculous.
Where
and
do you think it came from? Do you think that it was something, I mean, I do not want to place any blame on your parents at all, but either of them, but do you think it was more of a manifestation of perhaps your mother feeling out of control or like,
I think it was that my pediatrician was horrible, uh-huh. Like really, really, really horrible. And I was with her until I was like 16. Something else you should probably know, at the end of the spectrum, when I was 15, well, no, when I was 14, my sister and I both went on diets together, and I lost about 120 pounds in a year.
Good God.
Yeah. So I got down to 90 pounds on 5'10".
Oh my God.
Yeah. And so I had to wear a heart monitor to school, like, cause they like literally thought my heart was just going to give out. It was like really bad. And I went to this pediatrician, and she just like, I remember I was seeing her pretty regularly, and she was so excited when I dropped all this weight initially. Because there's a moment when you go from like 220 to 150, everybody's really happy for you, even if you're obviously being hugely unhealthy about it.
Right.
And like did it in 6 months at 15 years old. She didn't say anything. And then when I got super sick, she just like came at me so hard. And like, I just remember feeling so ashamed and so horrified. And I was like, this is the same woman who 10 years ago told me I was fat and an emotional eater when I was 5 years old. And I was like, I'm never seeing this doctor again. Like, this is a nightmare. And I remember I finally had the wherewithal of like, oh my God, like what a horrible situation I've been put in, where she's just like, be exactly this weight that I want you to be. And they also put children on those curves, the height weight curves, which are so fucked up. I remember like crying every single time I went to the pediatrician starting at 5 years old about the height weight curve, because I was always high on both. And it's like, I need to be higher on the height one than I'm higher on the weight one. Like, God, it was just such a fucking nightmare.
So exhausting.
Yeah. And I just like, I was so obsessed about it. And yeah, I remember this moment of being like, 10 years ago, you told me I was an emotional eater and sent me to baby therapy. And like, now you're like yelling at me about not being able to control my dieting. Like, I was just I mean, I think she was really horrible. I think, full disclosure, like, I think honestly, my mom just like was very busy, and she was a full-time job and was a single mom, and just like didn't, I don't place any blame on her for it, because I think she was just like doing what the professionals were telling her, honestly. And I don't think she struggled with eating disorders, so I just don't think that she got it, really. Right, you know what I mean? Right. Like, I don't think she saw what was being done to the same extent. And my sister was in rehab at the exact same time that I was getting hospitalized for anorexia. My sister was also in rehab because we were dieting together, quote unquote. And so we also got really competitive with each other, which I'm sure was also a component of it all.
I guess dieting is kind of competitive at its
nature.
It's hugely competitive.
But she was cheating. She was doing cocaine. So, like, I won. Like, I was like, okay, like, you definitely lost. You had to go to rehab. Like, this is bullshit. Like, I'm just, like, 15 and getting straight A's. Like, yeah, I definitely won. Just for the record. I think it's important everyone knows. But yeah, we were like very competitive and dieting, and I just wanted to win. And then I had this moment of like, they told me I couldn't play softball anymore. And I was like, oh fuck, dieting isn't good anymore. It's taking things away from me now. I'm going to stop. And I had to do weekly weigh-ins at that point. And I was like, I promise you I will gain weight every single week until you tell me to stop. And I did. Because I was just like, I'm done now. Like, I was like, as soon as I'm not getting the benefit of losing a shit ton of weight, like, it's just not appealing to me. Again, there are a lot of people with much more complicated eating disorders, and I'm not saying it's as simple as that for everyone. I think for me, I had more a case of copycat syndrome than anything else. Because for me, it was very quick to snap out of it. I was really sick for a year, and then from there, it was just kind of like, okay. But I will say, the way for me to get over it was to just be like, I no longer give any fucks. I'm gonna put anything in my fucking mouth that I want,
right?
Which has its other problems. Like, I smoke and I drink like 4 liters of Diet Coke a day, and like, you know, like, there's a lot of other issues that, as a means of preventing myself from being controlling around food, I have to let myself be very free in other areas of my life that probably aren't great for me. I should be able to eat whatever the fuck I want. I would like to not be smoking a pack a day, but I have an oral fixation, so that's the situation.
All right, we're gonna just take a really quick break. I think a lot about, like, I just have been thinking a lot lately about, like, our culture's obsession with health and wellness, and that, like, the things, even the concepts of like, these are things that we should and shouldn't do, or that we should and shouldn't be doing, and kind of like the way that we, just the many ways that we are told whatever we're doing is wrong. Whatever the fuck it is, whatever you're doing, it's probably bad and it's going to make you unhealthy. And then what? Then you're just a fucking piece of shit who might be unhealthy. You know, like what is, to what end are we like criticizing our choices? And like, you know, I guess just like, I think it's okay. Like if we know that we are doing something unhealthy and we recognize it, and if we still keep doing it, like that's our choice. We're going to do it. Like, I mean, we're all going to die.
I hate the health and wellness industry more than I hate almost anything in the world. Like,
yeah,
I was on the phone with my sister last night. I don't even remember what we were talking about, but we were talking about, something. Just like something one of my friends said to me that I thought was really bitchy. And she was like, God, that's so bitchy. That's like somebody like asking you about like, but what is your weight really doing to your health? And I was just like, yeah, this is the bitchiest thing.
Yes.
Like, and she was like, it's just like so uneducated. And it's so like putting on airs of having any sense of what's going on with you and your life and your feelings. And also like your body and your health. Like, yes, I am fat. If my arm falls asleep when I'm sleeping, people are like, oh, you have diabetes. I'm like, no.
Right.
Like, that's not what happened. I fell asleep on my wrist. Like, I actually have a very low risk rate of diabetes. like you need to chill, you know? Like,
And like, how many people are coming for you about smoking? You know what I mean? It's like, it's so fucking dumb. Even if they did come at you for smoking, it'd be like, what is your,
you got
no horse in this race, my man. Like, are you going to be at my bedside when I'm dying? Like what's the issue?
I simply cannot. But also even with the like, you know, quote unquote, like woke people about body weight and like the whole, like, you know, I'm not going to say health and wellness is the same as body positivity. And I think body positivity like can be a very good.
It has close. Close cousins.
Yeah. Like body positivity, quote unquote, like has some stuff going for it. That's great. You know, like whatever, do you, but like, it's not dealing at all with fat liberation or the issues that we're talking about.
No.
And so I was talking to a friend of mine who I think really does consider himself like pretty woke. He's a fitness writer. And I was talking to him about, this was like months ago, I think it was Nike had plus size models at their London store, or plus size mannequins at their
maybe.
London store.
Yeah.
And everybody was like freaking out. And I was talking to him about it, and he was like, well, I understand why people are upset, because like, you know, Nike is, it should have thin mannequins because that's like the aspiration of the brand. And I was like, do you realize how fucking offensive what you just said is? I was like, you think the only reason that people are going to work out is to lose weight? That's fucking psychotic. And I was like, you're also a fitness journalist. Like, you don't see any other value in fitness than weight loss?
Yeah, come on. Come on.
Like, I was just like, I was so appalled. And as soon as I said it to me, it was like, oh, yeah, I don't know why I said that. Like, I literally have no idea why I said that. Like, I know better than that. And I was like, I know that you think you intellectually know better than that, but you don't feel it. Like, you don't believe it. You do believe that people are exercising to look good for other people, and that's the reason, and not to make their bodies feel good.
Yeah.
And, like, you're a dumbass.
Yeah. It's like fat liberation and a belief and a, you know, advocacy around fat liberation can also exist within a person who is also a fitness nut. Like,
yeah,
those two things can exist, coexist peacefully and in
also,
harmony.
If we're worried about, okay, so obviously, like, we both know there is no like causality or any like grain of truth in the like fat people are unhealthy, like, trope.
No,
like,
right.
Obviously, there's no causality. There's no truth there. There is occasionally a correlation for certain items, namely, like, diabetes. There's a correlation. Yes, these are not causations. They are correlations. And a lot of why that happens is because fat people are not made to feel comfortable taking care of their bodies in other ways. Like,
right.
I found a fat yoga class online that I really love that, like, it is targeted towards my body. It is a yoga class that is for me, as opposed to sitting in a yoga class full of a bunch of like tiny little pixie fairy dust women that are like doing things with their body that my body would just never do. It makes you completely disinterested in being a part of any of the, God help me, but like quote unquote health and wellness industry when it is completely targeted at people with thin bodies.
Yeah.
Like, I don't want to do anything for my body. Like, the only thing I like is, well, I like my thought yoga class and I like spinning because like, I like it, but I still have issues where I'm like, okay, like my hips really hurt because I have hyperweight like on my hips. It's just like I have chronic bursitis on my hips. Mm-hmm. And like, that's not something I can talk to the instructors about.
No.
You know what I mean?
Right,
like,
right.
I would love to be able to go to a spin class that is like, okay, this is how like your knees and your hips are going to respond to this kind of movement.
Or
when
like, here's some modifications or whatever.
Exactly. So it's like, until those industries figure out a way to actually like, I don't even want to say market to, but like actually support their clients that are fat, like fat people are going to continue to just like kind of say like, fuck it, I don't want to do it.
I think like, also that like me. They probably never will, just because I think that the second that like the narrative of fatness and its intersection with fitness culture, toxic fitness culture, like when those things actually like collide in the mainstream and fitness culture is like completely debunked and basically like trashed by mainstream culture. I'm saying when this happens as if it's going to, which I don't actually trust that it will, but let's just pretend that it will.
I mean, it's basically just which will happen first, that or us all dying in the water wars.
Right. I kind of think that it's going to be the latter. But I will say that when that happens, it will require that the fitness culture itself takes a sharp look at the mirror and changes everything about the way it functions, which is making money off of people for reasons of personal guilt and shame and feeling like they have to be part of this fucking culture in order 100%. To like fit in. And instead of just moving, incorporating movement in our lives for joy or for, you know, for like release or whatever the fuck it is, like not for thinness.
Yeah, 100%. And like, I'm kind of going off on a tangent here, but like, there are moments where it comes to food or working out or whatever. And I think I'm at this weird point right now where I'm like, okay, fatness is a part of my brand. It's something I really care about. And then I will be like, okay, I really want to go spinning. And as soon as I'm in the class or I start going super regularly, my brain goes to that place of, oh my God, am I losing weight? Like, are my clothes looser? Like, is that happening? And then I get super pissed at myself because I'm like, what the fuck? This isn't why you're doing this. Like, but it's always going to be this gnawing like back. I feel like it's like when people talk about like their like Catholic guilt after they've like relapsed from the church, like completely left the church.
Totally.
Like, where they just hear, like, it's like, I hear the little pangs of like thin is better and fitness is a weight loss method and you don't actually want to eat that. And as soon as I start like spinning a lot or even like not like watching what I'm eating in an aggressive way, but as soon as I start, and again, this is just me, I'm like, okay, like I need to incorporate more fiber in my diet because I'm not shitting the way I want to shit.
Right.
Like, I start thinking like, okay, like if I want to shit the way I want to shit, I need to eat like XYZ beans. And then all of a sudden I'll be going to sleep and I'll be like, oh no, I've been thinking about what I've eaten today for 10 minutes. Like, while I'm trying to go to sleep, like, oh no, I've been walking around a fucking grocery store for 30 minutes trying to figure out what I'm going to have for dinner. Like, it happens. It claws its way to the
top
of your brain.
It sure does.
And then I'm like, simultaneously, like, God damn it, I don't want to be here. And also like, oh no, like I'm a bad fat activist. And then there's this like whole added shame of like, oh my God, I'm going to fucking hell for like being a bad fat girl. And you're like, I'm a bad thin girl because I'm not thin, and I'm a bad fat girl because I like evidently secretly hate myself. Like, it's so stressful.
It's so stressful. Awful. You know what? It's not our fault though. It's the fucking culture's fault. I like try so hard to like take any kind of fucking shame in this area out of my life. It's truly fucking hard. I mean, literally, it's going to be a lifelong thing. Like, there's.
100%.
There's just no way. And I am a person who was like pretty much raised in my own home. I was raised without weight stigma for the most part.
Really?
Or food shame.
Oh
yeah.
Oh my God. Congratulations.
I feel
family.
Extremely fortunate. And I have, there are, you know, there is fatness in my family. And I've, you know, I've also there, I am native. So there's like a different kind of decolonized perspective that I'm coming 100%. From that like actually doesn't dishonor fat people at all. So
I went to, I probably shouldn't say this if I don't remember her name, but I went to a really interesting lecture from a fat native woman that was talking a lot about the role of food in colonization.
Yes.
I'm going to look it up and I'll send it to you, but it was super interesting.
Yeah.
I don't remember the name. So
in an upcoming episode, perhaps the week following this one, there is I will be having a episode about food sovereignty, indigenous tribal food sovereignty.
Yes. Okay, great. So which, I just went to a lecture on this and I also really want to listen to your podcast. So I'm very excited for it to come out.
Yeah.
And I wish I could speak more educated to it, but
no, I'm learning too.
Listen to it. Yeah. When you do the podcast and I listen to it, then I can come back on and we can do a review of the podcast you just published.
I tend to find flaws in everything, but I do think that there is something to be said for just, I think I attribute a lot of the, like the way that I was raised without food shame and without body shame in my household.
Yeah.
And again, I went to a predominantly white, like public school in a rural small town in Oregon. And so I was definitely confronted with body shame
there.
And food shame.
It's like, coming there for sure.
Full on. Like, so it wasn't like I was not exposed to it at all. I just wasn't raised from an early young age to, you know, feel this way about my body.
Hate yourself.
Yeah, to hate myself. Although it happened. I think probably because more than being a person who hated, who was influenced by body shame, I was influenced by like a generational depression and anxiety.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
Like totally, just totally, like totally. Intergenerational trauma. I don't know.
Totally.
So I think that there is just, that is all to say that now as an adult, I'm trying really hard when those like thoughts creep into my head, when it's like, you should be walking more, or you should, basically all the shoulds, like, or shouldn'ts, like you shouldn't blah 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 blah, all those things, I'm trying so hard to be conscious of evaluating where they're coming from when they pop into my head, and it happens all the time. And I will say that doing this actual podcast where I'm literally every week thinking about and talking about weight stigma, diet culture and fatness, and has kind of helped me truly to like kind of create this delightful bubble in
my
world.
God, amazing.
Yeah, where I like where like fat acceptance is king, is queen rather, and you know, indigenous identity isn't erased. So like it's just this like magical world
what
that I'm living
world.
In. It's truly
oh
magical, and I've like. Pretty much like gotten rid of any friends in my world who like still adhere to diet culture and like don't follow my lead into fat liberation.
See, okay, so here's the thing I don't understand is that like I definitely, okay, so my best friend in the world is also fat, and I remember, oh, this is something else that happened when I began identifying as fat. I remember the two of us were in an elevator together and something came up and he was like, well, you know, we're fat, so whatever. And I was like, neither of us had ever called the other one fat.
Yeah.
You know what
it's
I mean?
A weird thing, right?
And it was this moment where I was like, oh my God, what? And he was like, bitch, do I really need to say like I'm fat and then you can say you're fat? And that, like, it was like, I just like, can we just shut the fuck up?
Yeah.
Like,
do we need to come out?
We're fat. And I was like, he was like, we're just fat whores. And I was like, okay. And then that was a really big moment where I was like, okay, like, that's fine. I feel very much like I'm not doing it alone. You know what I mean? Like,
yes.
I was like, we are fat. We are identifying that way. We are leading into it. So my best friend is fat. I would say besides that, most of the people in my life are thin, have always been thin.
Mm-hmm.
And I like to think that most of them think very critically about it. But I don't know how much of that is just they hear me talking about it and they are measured with their words when I'm around. And that is something that I guess I shouldn't be worried about, because I guess it doesn't really impact me. But just like, I will occasionally hear little slip ups of like, you know, I feel fat or whatever. Any of the like horrible things yeah. that you hear people yep. say. Yep. And I'll just be like, excuse me. And they'll be like, oh my God, no, I didn't mean that. Blah, 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 blah. And I'm just like, okay, what do you say when I'm not here?
you yeah. know what I mean? Like, you know, I have a lot of, fat friends now, through this work, and I hear this story a lot. Like, it doesn't necessarily happen to me, whether or not they're measured in my presence or, and then going home and being like, God, I like, can't wait to be more thin. Whether or not that's a reality, I actually think that any amount of, censorship that a person has to exhibit for somebody else around their language and like the language that they use, I think that that is that usually leads to some kind of self-criticism about like, whoa, you know, it's like if you imagine like a person who is around. I've had this happen to me in about my nativeness too, where yeah. my friends have been like, well, I've had a friend once who in front of me was like, well, I mean, like, because Native people like basically don't exist anymore. And I was just like, excuse you.
Jesus Christ.
excuse you. And it ended up kind of becoming this like conversation that she felt like she needed to have with me, but ultimately was having with herself, which is, wow, I really need to do more reading about this. Like, I can't believe I said that in front of you. And like, I feel bad about it. And to me, I'm like, all right, like my work here is done, I guess. Like, you do need to do learning and that's on you. And I don't know. I guess I just think that like even a small amount of being like, hey, please don't say that around me helps people to be like, ooh.
Yeah. I do think there's an element that like, again, like I think there are obviously means to comparison as far as when we're talking about a lot of like other systemic oppressions and injustices, like around like weight, race, gender, sexual orientation, whatever it might be. There's so many different things and you can draw parallels between all of them. But something that always comes to mind for me when I'm talking to people about weight bias and weight discrimination is I'm like, you as a thin person don't think that this affects you that much, fine, in the same way that it affects you, that like it is our culture and it is our system and it sucks to be a part of an oppressive system or culture, fine. But I'm like, you could tomorrow, you know, your body can change. And also the way that your body is most likely a result of internalized stigma and internalized like diet industrial complex stuff. And like the way that you live the world, the way that you interact with food is impacted by all of these issues, whether totally. Or not you are a fat person, like these things are impacting you on a real basis. And like, when I'm talking to you about like, okay, like I get side eye when I walk onto an airplane and like, that sucks for me and I don't like it. Like that could be you tomorrow also, like maybe yep. not tomorrow, but I'm like, your body could change. Your thoughts around food could change. You know what I mean? Like,
yeah.
It's
also, it's just, it's, they will change. Your body's yeah. going to fucking change. Like, yeah. live with it.
100%. 100%. And so I think like sort of framing it in that way where I'm talking to people, especially like thin people that I know, where I'm like, you realize that like the amount of work, maybe it doesn't feel like that much work to you to control your weight. Maybe you're a super normal person around food and like, that's great. And like, bully for you. Like, okay. Like I don't get it, but sure. But like, I mean, I finally get it, but that also involved me being like doing a lot of work to be comfortable with my weight.
Yeah.
Like, I don't know, just having those conversations with them where I'm like, you have to understand that like, you have to look critically at the way that this system of values has hurt you and harmed you, even if you are not fat, because it has. Right. I guarantee you, you have felt insecure about your body. I guarantee you, you have not allowed yourself to eat something you wanted to eat at some point in your life. Like you have denied yourself a basic pleasure. You have whatever.
Yep.
And that should at least be an initial like smoke signal yourself that like the system of values needs to change.
Totally. 100%. I think I also, I guess, you know, one of the things that I kind of alleviate myself from the pressure of educating my friends anymore because I'm like, I don't know, I'm doing a podcast. Yeah. Where it's like, I don't know, like all my jokes are about this. So like, I guess watch my performances.
Yeah.
You know, like I'm helping you out. So what are you bringing to the table? Like just yeah, a bunch 100%. Of oppression? Fucking no, get out of here. Emily, what are your comedy goals? Like, what are your like life goals, either comedy or non-comedy? Like, what are you, what would do you want to see for yourself in the future? Like, what are you aspiring to do and be? And I mean, not that you're not already doing and being amazing things, but like, what do you think about moving forward?
Well, I really want to lose 3 pounds. No, I would say I'm looking to focus more on writing. That's a huge focus for me. I absolutely love performing, but I love writing. I love creating worlds. I want to be able to create fat characters. I would love to be able to write my own show one day. That's like my big dream, my big spirit board dream is writing my own show that centers on a pair of sisters, one fat, one not. Hello.
Yeah.
So that's the script I'm working on right now. And I'm sure there will be, you know, many others I'll be working on over the next couple months, years, what have you. Non-comedy goals. I mean, I want to be happy. I want to have a lot of love. You know, I want to have a lot of people that I feel like really see me and really love me. And it's pure. And I think that's so great. And I just want to know as many people as humanly possible and connect with as many people as humanly possible. And I think that's what comedy lets you do, you know?
Like, yeah.
The bigger stage I can get, the bigger audience I can get, be it, you know, sitting in a theater or online or through TV or movies or whatever. Like, it's all just about connecting with more people and feeling like more people are, you know, their day is slightly better because of you. So,
yeah.
That's the big broad goal.
I love that. I think about that a lot in terms of like the fact that I am not going to have kids. And I think that there's like a little bit of, because of my work in comedy, I've found so much joy in bringing laughter to people. Like it actually, like,
there's nothing better.
I like have a pretty big boner about it and like love it so much. And
like for me, I mean, I won't say for you, I'm psychotically selfish about it. I'm just like such a pathological narcissist. I just fucking want everyone to look at me all the time, like all the time. Yes. So there's also that.
I mean, I'm like you, I like love performing, but I love writing too. And I just like making people laugh, man. It is the best. It's like a fucking lifelong goal. I want it to be something that I will always do, whatever form it takes. I don't give a shit.
I promise you will be making people laugh for the rest of your life.
I can't wait to be like an old lady who's just cracking fucking jokes and like all the kids in the room are like, oh my God.
Oh my God. I'm so excited for that. Yeah. No, I'll be right there with you.
Lastly, Emily, what's one cool thing that's going on or that you think about or that you like or that you want people to check out? It can be related to this conversation or unrelated. I think unrelated is cool, too. It can be anything.
Anything,
a person,
anything.
An Instagram account, a book you read, a TV show that you really like, something that's like just in your zeitgeist right now.
Something in my zeitgeist right now. Okay, so I'm currently watching The Bold Type, which is a show on, it was on Freeform. Yeah. I'm watching it on Hulu.
Yep.
My best friend was like, it's really important to me that you watch The Bold Type.
What you like about it.
I mean, okay, there is not good fat diversity on this show. So
totally unrelated. That's fine.
There's not good fat diversity on the show, and like it is problematic.
Consider yourself criticized, Bold Type.
Yeah. Like Bold Type, y'all are on fucking notice. But I'm only three episodes in, so I don't have like a fully formed. Again, if like in a couple episodes I see that there's some like horribly problematic racist thing, like, again, let me say I watched the first three episodes. That's all I can speak to. I'm really hoping that they don't, like, you know, like a fat character comes and they're all like, you have diabetes and you're gonna die. And
yeah, she's like, we can't have you around. Sorry.
Yeah. So like, please. Assuming that does not happen, I think it does a very good job of just showing, like, the importance of friendships. My best friend and I talk a lot about the fact that, like, so much narrative television centers around romantic relationships, and I just think it's bullshit. I just don't think romantic relationships are interesting.
I agree. Like,
I just don't think they're interesting. Maybe Once Upon a Yesteryear, like, give me some fucking Pride and Prejudice, like, okay, but, like, I think that having shows that really talk about found family and the importance of that and the family that you choose is so important. And making that fascinating and, you know, showing the friction in those relationships and the growth and the development. So I'm very excited. I also just like very much love the Freeform like milieu. Like, I love Pretty Little Liars. I just love like very light touch.
Yeah.
Not that funny, but not that dramatic TV. Yes. Like, it's neither funny nor serious.
Yeah.
Like, it's just, it's just like, it's like a screensaver kind of. It's just like on in my apartment.
I heard like a word that my, my manager told me, was like, when I was like, creating a drama sample, like my drama was like gritty true crime, like hardcore, like an hour long, like fucking intense crime drama. And she was like,
I would love to read
what
it.
Do you think of like, she goes, what do you think of hour long light? And as like a genre of TV. And I was like, hour long light.
Okay.
And that's kind of what that sounds like. It's like drama, but like, not hard hitting. Like,
it's not drama and it's not funny.
Yeah, and it's just, also right.
It's just, it's so whatever. And they're just like, it's just like, anyway, I
hour long
last
light,
night,
baby.
I've been like just watching Spider, like just playing Spider Solitaire and like having it on in the background. And
hell
like,
yeah.
I'm just like, I'm into it. And also, I'm just into the fact that like my best friend recommended it to me and it's just like giving him a lot of joy that I'm watching it.
I love that.
And so, yeah, he's very happy. His grandmother actually just passed away also. So it's giving us something to like consistently talk about while he's like dealing with stuff at home.
Yeah.
So I'm like, it's good timing for me to be watching it and I'm enjoying it and hopefully nothing horrifically problematic happens.
Yeah, totally.
So
that's great. My one cool thing, I'm going to use this opportunity to talk about a friend of mine who started a podcast with her. It's a woman in comedy named Laura Gray, and her friend Christine started a podcast called Should We Have Kids? And it's an interesting, they are both women who do not have children and are, I guess, of quote unquote childbearing age, which is whatever now is in our lives. And if you're not like Janet Jackson or a very, very rich person who can somehow carry a child late into your 60s.
Or like Bristol Palin.
Yes, exactly. anyway, it's an interesting podcast that just talks about asking the question, should we have kids? And they interview like people, women who don't have children, people who do have children, comedians, doulas, people in the like childbearing, rearing space. And it's a good one. I recommend it.
Amazing. Okay, I will check it out.
It's interesting if you're interested in that kind of conversation.
Oh, I'm very interested in that kind of conversation.
Emily, how can people find you? Where can they find you? How can they support your work?
So on social, at Emily Duke, haha. So EmilyDukeHaha. I'm much more aggressive on Instagram. Want to show off my thighs, and that's bigger on Instagram than Twitter.
Yeah.
And then, yeah, I perform all around New York City. Occasionally in LA, I make it out there every, you know, 2 to 3 months ish, hopefully. But yeah, just follow me on socials and you'll see all the stuff.
Follow Emily on the socials, everybody. Emily, I just want to say thanks so much for everything you do and for your fucking fire jokes. And thanks for being on my pod.
Oh my God. Thank you so much for having me. And thank you for everything you fucking do and the stupid shit.
Yes.
Want to know more about this week's guest? Go to womanofsize.com and you can read extended show notes and links based on this week's topics of conversation. While you're there, sign up for the Woman of Size newsletter and you'll get a monthly email with exclusive written and video content from your girl, Jana. If you're enjoying this podcast, please subscribe, rate, and review in Apple Podcasts and tell a friend. I hope to see you here next week. And until then, be big, baby.
This has been a Hoo Ha Ha podcast.
Hey again, Woman of Size listeners. Did you think I was just going to remind you one time about the Patreon thing and then never bring it up again? Well, you were wrong, unless you subscribed, in which case, thank you very much and I appreciate you. And so does Jana. But for the rest of you, Jana would really appreciate it. The podcast will get even better because of it, and you can feel amazing knowing that you are supporting Jana, an otherwise unpaid working artist and content creator who just wants to make a little money from her tireless labor around fat justice and Indigenous visibility. If you love the podcast as much as I do, go subscribe right now at patreon.com/womanofsize. You won't regret it. Plus, it's like super cheap. $1 a month, come on. Go to patreon.com/womanofsize and sign up to be a monthly member. It's super easy. That's patreon.com/womanofsize. Whatever it takes, man, just go and subscribe. Okay? Enjoy the episode.